Okuni's dances are heralded as the birth of kabuki, and although her performances may have had a religious origin, she had many imitators, and soon these entertainments developed into more risque performances by prostitutes. More or less, they were a front for prostitutes to display their singing and dancing talents, but also to advertise their bodies and sexual services. At this point, kabuki was only performed by women, and it became so popular that between 1615 and 1623, numerous officially licensed theaters opened. On several occasions, government officials attended the prostitutes' performances, which proved to be embarrassing for the morally rigid Tokugawa government. Fights would frequently break out over who would get to take the more popular performers home at the end of the evening. To avoid further embarrassment, the government issued an edict in 1629 barring women from all stages. Well, barring women from the stage in the early 17th century begins to sound a little like Elizabethan England, where boys played the female parts. But this was part of a middle-class phenomenon in Japan, the rise of the kabuki theater. I'm Norman Gilliland.
And I'm Emily Auerbach. This is University of the Year.
What did middle-class Japanese theatergoers demand that the higher classes did not? If women were banned from the stage, who got to go to the performances? And what kind of stories took place on the stages of Japan? Our guests are part of the University Theater's production of a kabuki play, actually a set of plays. They are Zen Substitute and Nakarami, the Thunder God. They open Friday night and run through March 13th, and they include the director, David Furumoto, one of the two dramaturgs, Bethany Wood, and two consultants from Hawaii, Gertrude Tsutsumi and Howard Asau.
Oh, welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Madison.
Thank you.
So kabuki theater in Madison, I know we've come a long way from that description that Norman just read about the prostitutes and banning people from stage. Seth, help us understand what place kabuki theater had back in its early days and why you're doing a performance of it today.
Well, the important thing to remember about kabuki theater is that it was started to be the entertainment for, I would say, the townspeople. So this is the everyday person. And just a little correction to one of the notes. Although, yes, indeed, you know, there were the imitation by the groups of prostitutes was one of the reasons that got the women thrown off the kabuki stage back then. At the same time that the women's troops were going, there were still other troops of mixed, you know, both male and female actors performing, as well as some just male troops at the time. I guess the important thing to remember is that this was started by a woman, Okuni. And as you put in your very nicely phrased history in the capsule there of kabuki, indeed, the women got thrown off the stage about that time. They were replaced by what was called young men's kabuki. And the same thing started happening with the young men's kabuki. So then after that, it was about 1652, that the edict was only adult males could perform. And one of the, and here we go into a cultural thing, and I'll try to make this real fast. One of the things that took place when you became an adult male was that the young boys would shave off the hair that was on the front of their head here. And, of course, that's the part that would make it very difficult for you to portray a female character if you've got this shaved spot in the front of your head. So that's one of the reasons why the government thought they could control kabuki by doing that. But kabuki was still a very popular theater form. I would say from about 1652, though, is the where kabuki really starts developing into one of the great classical forms of theater that you'll find in Japan today. Certainly from 1652, we have the establishment of the various acting styles that you'll see on the kabuki stage today. You have the establishment of the various actors' houses or the families, because this is a tradition that gets passed down from father to son. So, for example, right at the moment, we are up to Ichikawa Danjiro the 12th, which means that there have been 12 generations of this particular acting family in existence. There are some much older ones, too, that exist. You mentioned the Shakespearean theater, and there are a lot of, I guess you could call them similarities, because you have these very powerful sort of actor managers who are in charge of a lot of the development of kabuki at its formative stage. But true to form, to this very day, kabuki remains a very, very lucrative professional theater scene. The actors get paid a lot of money. We still have just only males performing in the actual kabuki. That will not be the case here, however, because we have to give equal time to all of our students here.
And how would you define kabuki? If somebody said, what is kabuki? What does it mean?
Well, it's a theater that has one ka means music or singing. Bu is dancing, and ki is acting. So you have all these three elements, and the actors are trained in all these things.
And that distinguishes it from whatever you would call other theater in Japan?
Shall we say that I think it has more to do with the kabuki is unashamedly theatrical, all right? When we talk about bombastic performances, okay, I will turn to a kabuki performance of, say, the Arigato. Arigato characters are sort of the superheroes and the supervillains of kabuki, and you'll see some of that in the play Narukami if you come and see it. They're over the top. All I can explain to you about kabuki performances is it basically changed my life when I first saw my first performance of it. You're looking at someone who had every intention of becoming the next greatest marine biologist in Hawaii, all right? And after seeing a performance of kabuki theater, I became so totally thrilled and enchanted by it that I said, I have got to learn how to do this.
What enchanted you about it?
The energy of the acting style, the sheer theatricality of what was going on. Okay, there was none of this. I guess you can tell that I'm not a great fan of super realistic theater. If I want to see that, I'll watch TV or something like that.
Yes, I'm ruling out Ibsen, for example.
But it's one of these things that just – it fascinated me. There was a vitality. There was a commitment by the actors that I had not seen before on a lot of other stages that just was attractive to me.
So, I mean, it's not just melodrama.
No. Kabuki encompasses – when you talk about kabuki theater, especially today, because kabuki – a lot of people tend to relegate kabuki to like museum piece theater, okay? That isn't exactly true because certainly as time goes by – the kabuki theater people are also looking at developments over here. Okay, for example, I will look at something very mundane such as theatrical lighting. It's interesting to note that the kabuki theater was probably the first theater form in Japan that actually took the electric light to heart and said, yes, this is what we're going to use in our theaters, all right? But even now, all right, traditionally, kabuki theater was known for not doing much with lights. It was either, you know, you have a very brilliantly lit stage, or if they want to make a dark scene, they'll turn the lights down. That was about the extent of the special effects lighting. But nowadays, with the advent that's been going on all around the world, you'll see them experimenting with various types of lighting instruments and other things. In fact, that's what in this production here, there are a number of student designers that are working on the show. And our lighting designer, I told him, don't feel that you have to just restrict yourself, because I said, you know, we've got the equipment. I think we should be using the lights to help make the story just as theatrical as we can. And I'm hoping that we'll see very wonderful effects happening when the dragon gods of Rain are released.
Nothing like a good dragon.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let me ask you, Howard and Gertrude, both since you are David's mentors with kabuki, what about the art of kabuki attracts you? What is it that makes it somehow, first of all, especially Japanese, and also somehow speaking to you today?
Well, my major is actually dancing. And many of the dances are based on kabuki plays, and they're called kabuki dance. And through that, I got interested in watching kabuki.
And what's unique about the dance for kabuki?
Well, one thing, there's a lot of history to it. And there are a lot of roles that you can play. They're not what you call auspicious dances or dances that you do only for ceremony, but it tells a story. And you can show your emotions.
Yeah. So I'll throw out the word theatrical again.
And again. Then, again, there's the Arigato style that's very rough. And then you have the feminine styles. And in regular, like, what you call Nihon Buyo, many times you don't have that kind of thing. And it's
Like Nihon Buyo, she's talking about what we refer to as classical Japanese dance. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. And would that be the same for theater, too? Is there still that distinction between classical Japanese theater and kabuki?
Yes, I would say there definitely is. Bethany, you might be able to...
Well, I just wanted to say when David keeps emphasizing the theatricality of kabuki, it's very much in comparison with what we know as realism, but also... Kabuki developed for the common people at the time the aristocrats were watching no theater, which is very meditative and very about, you know, kabuki also has a spiritual element, but the movements are very slow and focused, and kabuki has spectacular costume changes and fights and movement that is very in close contact with the audience due to the Hanamichi Bridge that runs through the audience, which is very exciting. We're going to have one in the Mitchell.
Okay, explain that one before we go any further.
The Hanamichi Bridge, it means flower path, and it is literally a bridge that goes from the back of the audience onto the stage. And main characters will make their entrances on this bridge so that the whole audience can get a close view of this character, and they will usually stop at the position. It's called the Shichi-san.
Shichi-san.
And that is the 7 3-point. You're 7/10 of the way from the back of the house, and you're 3/10 away from the stage. And it is supposed to be the best spot to be seen. So often the actors will enter and then stop there to give a speech or a special pose. Later they put a trap door in so that characters playing spirits could rise or exit from that point. So it's very interactive in that way with the audience. And one thing, when I started studying theater of Japan, I started with no theater, which is very
beautiful. And this is
NOH.
Right, yes. not no theater.
Yes.
Okay. You start talking about there's no business like show business, it gets very confusing.
There's no business like no business. And it's very interesting, but it's also very deliberate and slow compared to kabuki. And then I saw videos of kabuki, and it's the action movie of Japanese theater. It's just spectacular.
Also, she mentioned the stage. There's that trap door called Suppon on the Hanamichi. But on the stage, you have a large trap door that can bring up a whole orchestra of musicians that's in the back. And then you have the smaller ones there. And also you have the revolving stage. And so when you have scene changes, the actor just walks from one scene to the next.
Well, so it's constantly changing.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And the revolving stage is often thought of as a German invention, used in Japan mm-hmm. centuries before it came here.
And Howard, your take on kabuki?
Well, my first experience with kabuki when the Grand Kabuki visited Hawaii for the grand opening of the concert hall in Honolulu, the major actors were there, and they had about a month of program there in Hawaii. And that was my first experience visualizing kabuki. And at that point, I was still a high school student. And when I saw that, similar to David's impression, that got me totally involved and wanting to know more about this art in more detail. And at that time, at the same time, it was 1964, I believe. And at that same year, Onoe Kikunobu, Gertrude Tsutsumi, who's next to me, was having her first major of her concert at that time. And that surprisingly showed me the appreciation of the dance aspect of kabuki. And so I thought about it and thought about it, and I said, I'd like to learn this art form. And so I actually started my formal instruction in Nihon Buyo with Gertrude Tsutsumi in 1964 after her major concert. And I've been with her ever since then. And through her teaching and her expertise, I realized that Nihon Buyo is one of the major component that makes up what kabuki is. And so a kabuki actor, is trained in Nihon Buyo when he's very young, let's say maybe age.
Is it hard?
Initially, no. They start them off at a novice piece. It's like going from kindergarten, and you work yourself all the way up to graduate school. And they're trained in both male and female roles. And, of course, as they get older, they choose to specialize, whether they want to be more of a masculine actor or a more female impersonating actor. However, if you can do both roles, both types of dances, both male and female, your repertoire of dancing is much greater.
Better chance of getting a job, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, since we don't have video, can you help us see it? Like, describe what the dancing would look like if we were going to envision kabuki dance.
I have to wonder, too, maybe even a little bit before that, about the costume.
Okay.
Yeah, make,
we're getting
make
into
us see
the,
this.
Okay, make you see this. All right. Well, picture, if you will, a gorgeously attired female character. She's wearing a brilliant crimson-colored kimono that is embroidered with all sorts of wonderful flowers and other things, with gold and silver and green and yellow embroidery thread, coming down this rampway, right, brushing right beside your seat as you're sitting there. And she is moving with extreme grace and loveliness. And at the same time, you're going, okay, this is actually a male actor doing this.
They do that in Vegas all
okay,
the time.
Well, but a fan is being used. A fan is a very important part of kabuki movement. There's a saying that if you have a fan, you don't need any other prop, because the fan can become anything you want it to become. And this is very true with a lot of the dances that we see. And there is a huge bell hanging out on the stage, and this dancer starts dancing around the bell, which is hanging up, and suddenly some people in black charge out, and they pull some threads out of her costume, and voila, suddenly there is a change of color and pattern of the kimono that happens right in front of your eyes. All right, that a little bit is an example of some of the effects that you would see in a kabuki dance performance. For our play, I'll describe a scene that's coming from Narukami, the thunder god. Narukami has been tricked, seduced, one might say, by the lovely princess Taima, who has come to find out the secret of why, of how he has trapped all of the dragon gods of rain in this one cave. So she has been sent to find out the secret, and she does succeed in her job. So in this first half of the play, our Narukami has been a very austere Buddhist priest, all white. He's got a very severe makeup on his face, pretty much just white and black, not very much other color there, hair pulled back. There is immediate change when he discovers that he's been tricked, when he wakes up from this, and it happens right in front of the audience, where, again, threads are pulled out of the costume, and instead of just the plain white, we suddenly have designs of red and orange
fire
on the costume, and his hair has changed. Instead of being this straight back thing, his hair is standing out on end practically. It looks, you know, like he's put his finger in a socket or something and all the hair has gone out. And he's got these very strong blue and red lines now that are on his face to signify that he's forsaken the Buddhist path and is now intent on getting revenge on this person. So that is an example of what you will see on the stage. I'm sorry, I'm probably not even doing it justice over the radio here. But
this happens before our eyes, though. I gather there's not a lot of curtain pulling in a kabuki play.
There are curtains, and they are pulled, but a lot of the stuff happens right in front of the audience. That's what we have stage assistants for, known as koken or kurogo. If you see on a Japanese stage someone that's dressed completely in black with a little hood over their face, oftentimes that means don't pay attention to that person. They're there just to assist the actor in what they're doing. And I've had so many Western directors tell me, you know, this is a lovely idea. I think I'm going to try to use it in my next play.
I've heard of this person who went to see kabuki in Japan, and he was a Western person. And when he got out of the play, he told his friend, that was the best burglar story I saw. You see all these guys just walking off in the black, you know.
Carrying furniture or whatever.
Or just taking things away, you know.
We're going to look at some specific plays being performed here in Madison when we continue in a moment with University of the Year.
I am damned. Still living, but falling into hell. Though damned, though sinking, what do I care? What do I care?
Buddha himself was first a mortal. He had a wife as Prince Shita. He had children. Say yes to me. Say yes to me. Refuse me, and I shall transform myself on this very spot into a devil. I shall devour that beautiful throat and carry you into hell with me. Woman, well, well, what is your
That is the sound of Kabuki Theater, such as will be performed in Wisconsin for the next few weeks, in Madison to be specific. Our guest and the director of the play, David Furumoto, also with us, the dramaturg for these upcoming performances, Bethany Wood, and also two advisors in the form of Gertrude Tutami and Howard Asau. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Emily Auerbach, and we're going to get into this and find out what exactly happens when the whole play. Does the whole play sound like that?
No, 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 no. That's one of the very theatrical portions, all right? It doesn't go on all the way through the show.
I noticed how intently you were grimacing with that. That's something that the radio audience can't see, but as you're making the noise, your face is really contorted and intense.
Yeah, this particular spot is a very important part for the character of Narukami, because this is when he realizes that he has experienced this idea of having a woman around, all right? So I guess you might say it's the idea of he's discovering sex for the very first time.
And he doesn't like what done because
No, if anything, it's the opposite thing. He's discovering that he likes it so much that he is willing to cast away all of his Buddhist precepts about strict asceticism and chastising one's flesh and body and all of that stuff and slip down the slippery slope there.
He doesn't feel cheated, though, that this woman has come in with a specific mission?
He doesn't know that yet.
He doesn't know that. And what is the purpose of saying the lines as you just did as opposed to sort of a more normal delivery that we would expect in the theater?
That indeed is part of what I would call the kabuki stylization, all right? So if you were to go to Japan to the professional kabuki theater and see a play that has the arigato-style actors in it, you will oftentimes hear that type of voice. For example, I'm just going to do the first couple of words in Japanese now to give you an example, all right? And this is one of the things that... Let me just do it, and then you'll see. So this would be in placement of the I am damned, that was at the very beginning of the previous thing, all right? So this is Japanese now.
Darakusta.
So that's that particular portion in Japanese. So the wonderful thing about... We're using a translation of the play by Dr. James Brandon, who is a retired professor of Japanese theater from the University of Hawaii, who came up with these marvelous English translations of the plays. And one of the big things that he worked at when he was putting these things together was the fact that he would try to match up this actual, almost to this very syllable. Japanese is a very syllabic language, okay? Each syllable is very important. And so it helps when you're working with a script that tries to capture the same flavor and inflection sort of thing. And
does your script have a marking that says, you know, read this in a loud, weird way?
He'll say, you know, this is something where when we... Okay, I was... God, how many years ago is this? All right, 1974, I think this was. This was my first kabuki play that I ever performed in, all right? And this was actually the premiere of this particular version of the play in English. And Dr. Brandon was directing. He had brought in Matagoro Sensei from Japan to sort of teach the movement. And what we had to do when we studied the script was we listened to the entire script and we learned the script pretty much in Japanese totally first. So we're trying to imitate the Japanese actors, the professional actors. And then the English script was brought in and then we started doing the transferal. This is one of those tricky things that it takes a while for people to kind of grasp. as opposed to, okay, so that was a male voice, all right. Let me see if I can pick out a female voice to hear.
We'll
okay.
see how good an actor this guy is.
So you can listen to this a little bit, of course.
The arigato style that David keeps talking about was actually developed by the first Ichikawa Danjiro. He mentioned Ichikawa Danjiro the 12th is performing now, but the first Danjiro developed the arigato style, which is the superhero or villain. And the movements for those characters, especially in these moments of passion, are very broad, and they will often freeze in a pose called a mie pose to emphasize a point. So after the speech, if you can picture it, that David just gave, if you can picture him freezing in a pose to emphasize the point, the characters do that often at the most dramatic moments.
All right, let me see if I can give you a little bit of Princess Taima now today here.
Though once a keepsake, you are now an enemy I must abandon. Can I then perhaps begin to hope for forgetfulness? And so I had thought to wash from this rough robe the dust of carnal life. Yet the drought is everywhere. Wells are dry, streams have stopped. I had heard of a waterfall in the venerable mountain where, in spite of drought, water miraculously never ceases flowing. I only wish to cleanse away past carnal memories so I can begin life anew. Enchanting husband, I miss you so. Can you guess what thought fills my heart?
So that's an example of sort of the female voice. All right, not a super good one.
Trying to flush out those carnal desires. Right? Very commendable.
Okay.
Now, as far as kabuki, comedy, drama, a mix of both. Comedy, tragedy, something
excellent
in between?
Question. A question that I always get asked by students very frequently. I would have to say that when you're looking at kabuki plays in general, that yes, there will be some overriding points that the play is trying to make. For example, if we're doing, say, what we call a jidaimono or history play, oftentimes those plays surround the tragedies which befall, say, a samurai family of some kind. And so the overall arc of the play may be very tragic. You have, say, parents that are sacrificing the life of their only child to save the life of yet another child. And so the overall arc is very sad. But in the middle of this thing, you may have a comic scene that will pop up. So I would say the kabuki playwrights tended to be, you want to keep your audiences entertained as much as possible all the way through. And so I would say plays will have certain scenes that may be very comic in the midst of something that's, you know, horribly tragic or bloody.
Shakespeare did it. I mean, Aristotle didn't approve, but Shakespeare did it.
Exactly.
Is there a moral sensibility? In other words, you know, is this a fable, an allegory? Is there sort of a message that comes across?
I believe that you can find a message from almost every play that's done. Narukami the Thunder God, for example, it's from a much longer play. Okay? You're only going to be seeing one act of this play, and this is the way that kabuki plays are often written. A whole play may have taken 5 to 6 hours to see the complete play because it's made up of several acts. But each act is generally crafted in such a way that it can actually stand on its own. And I guess as far as the moral of this story, well, there's actually a much bigger villain than Mr. Narukami in the piece, and that is Prince Hayakumo, who is trying to take over the country from the rightful ruler. And what has happened is that they've been trying to assure the passage of the emperor's line by a healthy male child being born. And way back at the beginning of the play, Narukami steps forward and says, I can assure you that I can assure the birth of a healthy male heir, which he proceeds to do so. In return, the emperor has told him, well, I'll give you anything you ask for. Narukami comes back, and what he is demanding that the emperor give him is basically, I want you to build a temple and consecrate it to me, right? Which the emperor can't do, because that would be the same as saying, okay, we're making you a god now, Narukami. Mm-hmm. And so in a huff, Narukami goes off and through his magical arts traps all the gods of rain and causes this immense drought to happen. Hence, Taima is being sent over to find out. Now, in the actual production, or in the actual play, I'll leave it up to the audience to decide when you come and see the play, all right? Does Taima actually do the dirty with Narukami all the way? Or is Narukami by this time too drunk to perform? Because the way that it's staged, I would say that by the time Narukami manages to get her up into his hut, he is so far gone that he basically falls asleep on her, and she slips out the side door and basically cuts the rope that's binding these spirits of rain and lets them go.
So he doesn't know if he's had that great a time or not.
Exactly.
And the screen comes down, so you can't see anything.
And so walking out of the theater, an audience member would be changed in what way? You know, how they talk about catharsis or about some sort of transformation that might happen in the mind of the viewer. What is it that I would go away?
I would say an audience person should come out of our production. It's not so much about catharsis, I don't think. It's not so much about feeling that, wow, okay, I've just had this wrenching emotional thing. I would say I've gone to the theater and seen a very, very entertaining play that really held my interest in a lot of different things happening in it all over the place. Because, indeed, for example, this play has got so many different types of endings that could possibly be done. You are going to be seeing an ending here that we bring out another special character that is called the Oshimadoshi, which is literally translated as the demon pusher, okay, or the demon queller. And this character shows up to push Narukami back when he starts trying to go after Taima to wreak havoc on her. So we have yet another fantastic character appearing. And it will end, oftentimes, the whole idea is to please the audience, to make the audience come out of the theater feeling that they really had a good time. And so typically, this play will end on a big tableau scene. And what I'm adding here is that oftentimes for a spectacular piece like this, they will end the piece actually with a special pose where they will talk directly to the audience and say, you know, and now, you know, in thanks of your giving us a full house, we are now going to perform this little ceremony for you. And that includes the two major actors actually drawing in the air the Chinese characters for large, o, or dai, and entrance, iri. So it's called the o iri, and it's a way of assuring full houses for theaters all over the place. So we are sending out a wish to all of the theaters all over the world from our little performance here to have a good season and wish everybody full houses. So again, you know, it tends to be the type of theater, I'll say it's an actor's theater, okay? The audience really in Japan is coming to watch the actor perform these wonderful styles of acting. And because of that, you're always going to get little reminders of the fact that you are in a theater, okay? For example, our actor who's playing Narukami in the middle of the seduction scene is going to pull out suddenly and use his own name at one point, all right? At the very top of the play, we have a couple of comic monks that start this whole scene off. When they come on, they're going to be talking about a play that's being performed in Madison. So, not to give away all the punchlines, but this is something that's very common in kabuki theater.
Well, Molière did it too. it's somehow very effective, isn't it? When suddenly
other things in it that when an actor is acting and he's giving his lines, and all of a sudden he'll break up into a dance, a little dance. And so, you know, it gives you a little bit of relief from just acting.
Well, it certainly does keep the audience guessing. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen next.
And I might throw in at this point that, you know, we've been talking about Narukami all this time, but, you know, there is the other play on the bill too, which is The Zen Substitute, which is a play which is based on a much earlier form of theater called Kyōgen, which were comic farces that were performed. This is the kabuki version of it, and again, this is a piece that shows off the dancing of the main actor in the piece, which is the husband, and it's a funny piece. Again, we have a husband who has probably been in an arranged marriage, and he is anxious to steal off to see his mistress. His wife dotes on him to the point where she cannot bear to be parted from his side for a moment. And he comes up with a plan, he thinks, where he can get away with this and brings the servant into it. And it's called The Zen Substitute because the Lord tries to pull a fast one by claiming he's going to be in the garden doing this Zen meditation under a cloak. And so he puts the servant under the cloak instead, and wife cannot bear to be separated from hubby very long. She comes out, discovers the ruse, replaces the servant under the cloak. Hubby comes back from his happy night and proceeds to describe every last detail to his wife, who is hiding under the cloak.
Always a great dramatic.
sounds like Chaucer, actually.
And then you can guess what's going to happen at the end. All right, but it's a very funny piece. It's full of a lot of just humorous escapades. The dancing is a big part of this. And again, it goes back to that kabuki idea of the movement being so important.
When David says that it is a kabuki version of the Kyogen play, it brings up an interesting point about these classical forms of Japanese theater. And they all share scripts. They'll adapt the same story from a different type. So Narukami, for example, was first a no play. And it actually is a story that goes back to India, then was translated into Chinese, then a no play, and then in 1684, the kabuki play that we're doing a translation of. So it's kind of like seeing the same story as a musical, as a straight play, as a TV show, and a movie. You see that adaptation popping up in these various forms.
And are there fights in the kabuki? I always think of kabuki sort of almost like a slightly martial art type thing.
Yes, in Narukami, there's going to be several scenes where the monks will get involved in a combat with Narukami himself. And at the end, these monks will also change into what they call hanayoten, flower soldiers. And they will also have a combat with Narukami.
Flower soldiers, as in they're dressed like flowers?
Well, they call them hanayoten because they're dressed relatively colorfully,
flashy,
bright colors.
This is a comment that our costume shop manager made when he saw the clothes, which I might mention. Okay, kabuki, you talked about the costuming being very elaborate. Yes, it's a great task to try to bring this. So we're actually borrowing a lot of these clothes from two different universities in the country that have been gracious enough to let us borrow their sets of costumes for the show. So we're making use of costumes from Pomona, California, and the University of Hawaii. But the printing of these, he said, this looks like something from the 60s, all right, because of the vivid colors. And indeed, there is sort of like a flower pattern that's on the print. So you'll see that when you come to see the play. But yeah, he said, this has got to be a 60s pattern. I said, no, this is basically based on this pattern that, you know, is very, very old. But he said, is this where they got this? I don't know. We'll leave it up to you to decide, okay? Did the Japanese invent the 60s flower power movement, or was that something else again? But you'll see this in the costuming. It's pretty bright. It does look like something from the 60s.
Some more looks behind the scenes at Kabuki Theater when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air.
Music being used in a current production of Kabuki Theater at the UW-Madison. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Norman Gilliland, and our guests for this hour are David Furumoto, the director of theater, and one of the dramaturgs, Bethany Wood, and two consultants who are here from the University of Hawaii, and that's Howard Asau and Gertrude Tsutsumi. Kabuki, we learned, the word stands for music, dance, and acting. It's a very stylized form of theater coming to us from Japan. I was going to ask you, Howard and Gertrude, since you have been part of Kabuki theater, seen many performances and know sort of what to expect, what would a longtime Kabuki audience member get out of a production that a newcomer might miss?
If you go to see, say, Narukami, and if these people have been going to theater for a long time, they probably saw the father's production, his way of acting, Narukami. And so they're anxious to see how the son does.
So it's that family connection.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That too, yeah.
And let's say you're in the theater and you're watching this performance to see how the actor is going to behave. Are there particular moments, the way in Hamlet we might be waiting for that to be or not to be soliloquy? I mean, what would we be waiting
Something
for?
Like what David did, that kind of speech, or their movement in the Aragoto fighting.
And what about the audience behavior?
The audience would totally get involved, especially if you're you have your favorite actor that you go to the Kabuki Theater to see. Each of these actors belong to a house of acting or a family house of acting, and each of these family houses have names. For example, the Ichikawa Danjuro house acting name is called Naritaya.
So you can give an example.
And we belong to the Onoe house of acting, so our yago, or our nickname for the stage, would be Otowaya. So, for example, if Ichikawa Danjuro is doing Narukami, and the famous part of the play, or the highlight of his line delivery, and as he just about to start his line delivery, you can yell out from the audience standpoint, Naritaya!
Or, at the beginning, they might say, Matte mashita. That means I was waiting for this. And then the actor talks.
And that's all right then for the audience to jump up.
However,
but people who don't know say, what are they saying? They're yelling out.
But for the actor's timing and rhythm, you have to know exactly when he's about to start his line.
You don't want to cover the line.
You cannot cover his line, and you cannot say it too early. So you just have to know when he's breathing. In other words, you have to be breathing along with him also.
Interfere his thoughts, mm-hmm. like he's doing something, and all of a sudden, you know, you get this loud voice coming in. The actor would kind of get disturbed.
And when he finishes, is there equivalent to a bravo?
Or everybody claps.
Claps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you can yell out his name again mm-hmm. before the curtain closes on him.
And you mentioned bribes, or not bribes, but
some
tips?
People just like to do that.
In the Kabuki Theater today, they have these people called omuko. Professional name callers. And you have to have a certain kind of voice, certain kind of rhythm in your voice. It's almost like narrative singing. And these omuko would go to these main actors' dressing room before the show to say their greetings. And the actors themselves will give them a small tip. In other words, assuring that his family name would be called at the most important time of the play that he's going to be on today. And so you can spot an omuko in the Kabuki Theater because they're dressed in kimono. Usually they're all men. They're avid Kabuki fans. And they're dressed very traditionally. So in kimono, you would never hardly see any omuko dressed in a suit. So you can spot them in the theater, in the lobby. And they have this sort of air about them.
And David, here in Madison, as you're doing the production and working with students who might be more used to doing, you know, Long Day's Journey Into Night or Glass Menagerie or something, how do you train a UW-Madison student in how to deliver kabuki, how to make it work?
Starting from scratch.
Starting from scratch. Well, I do actually offer as part of, I mean, the whole reason why I was brought here to become a member of the faculty at the theater and drama department was the practical teaching of an Asian style of performance. So I teach courses in Kabuki theater here on a regular basis. Generally, I get to work with the incoming class of MFA acting students for their first year that they're here. And then I also teach courses to the undergraduates. Usually I offer a course in the fall semester. So that's a basic class, and it's a class where I will be teaching them basic walks. I'll be teaching them some very basic dance movements. I'll be teaching them some basic fight choreography. It's really about getting the movement and the feel of kabuki into them at first. If I do have the opportunity to work with someone in a second semester, that's the semester that we usually will start zeroing in on looking at a scene from a kabuki play. But how do you teach that? Pretty much the same way that I learn from these people here. It's a lot of watching, listening, and trying to imitate the teachers as exactly as you can, because that's how you learn the thing first. Then, after you get a certain amount of expertise under your belt, that's when you're able to sort of add your own little stamp to it, if you want to call it that. But you don't stray too much from the original teachings very much. Vocally, it's a very difficult thing because generally because I usually don't have a lot of time, I will make a recording of myself doing all of the parts, giving it the stylization in which I feel is going to work. Once the actor picks up on the stylization, that's when we can go back and say, all right, if you feel that you want to emphasize a different word here, that's fine. You know, I give you that freedom to do that. But this is the basic style that we go to. I should mention, you know, that Wisconsin is one of the schools in this country that actually developed a very early interest in Asian performing styles, because this goes back to A.C. Scott being here in the 60s and whatnot. So Wisconsin actually is one of the first schools, I would say, that really thought that there was something important to be learned from Asia at that point. So I feel like I'm sort of carrying on the spirit of that a little bit. And of course, I've been very fortunate in my life in the teachers I've had, not only the people that are sitting at this table with us right now, but also back in Japan and various other places. I mean, I can't emphasize how important the teachers are to this type of theater style. It really is, you know, learning from a master craftsperson sort of thing. It's like learning how to become a good blacksmith or something. You know, the best way to do it is by working with another person, you know, who really is good at what they do. And that's the best way to learn. One of the favorite sayings that my teacher always used, this is Matagoro-sensei, would be, you have to be like the best thief when you come to study with me, because I will be demonstrating all these things up there and I will be showing you things that I've, you know, it's taken me years to learn. It's your job to be the sponge sort of thing, to, okay, yes, I can use that, you know, I'll take that from you and use it sort of thing. So it's sort of an interesting parable there, but I want you to be the best thief, steal as much as you can from me as far as the acting style is concerned.
You're not going to be doing any cross-dressing in this, or are you, since you have a mixed cast?
Actually, you want to talk about cross-dressing? We have probably the opposite thing going on here. I'm mm-hmm. going to have several female actors that are going to have to be playing male characters. So we will not have any examples of the Onagata, the true Onagata, which is the male playing the female. But we will have plenty of the others. And I don't know what to call that.
You get to coin your term.
Yeah, it's a wrinkle on that, yeah.
And if you were going to make a case to somebody listening as to why they should come and sample Kabuki theater, can I ask each of you to do that? Make your case.
For me, I would say you need to come to see the play more than once. The reason why is because there's so many things going on in the play, not only acting, color, the costume, the design, the theatrical techniques, the technical part of the theater. It's impossible to absorb everything in just one sitting. And oftentimes when we go to Tokyo to see the Kabuki, we've seen the play, we see it again. And each time you see it, you see something different. And you learn more by watching it. You learn more about the actor, his skill, and you find much more beauty coming out of each of these actors.
Pertaining to Narukami, you'll go away feeling you've been entertained, mm-hmm. and you'll never get bored watching this. And also Zen Substitute. It's really fun to watch. And I must say that the students that David has are very focused, and we enjoy working with them.
It's a great bargain for the money you're spending on the tickets. You got two shows here, two shows that you're not going to see almost anywhere else.
Step right up.
Except Japan.
But again, why specifically Kabuki? We could go see, you know, Hamlet, Glass Menagerie.
Okay.
So why
seriously,
Kabuki?
Seriously, why Kabuki? I think it's an unusual opportunity to hear a Kabuki play or a Japanese play being performed as closely as possible to the original. In English, so you don't need an earphone guide now to be...
No super titles.
No super titles. And to experience that, I think, to experience the style and the technique of that particular theater style, yeah.
And also non-native Japanese doing the acting, mm-hmm. yeah. And they do well, these students.
I would say two reasons, actually. I think kabuki is such a visual form, and as much as I love the medium of radio, it's very difficult to describe it. So I would encourage anyone in the area to come just for the experience of seeing it. But also, I think it's amazing that we have Howard and David, whose lives were totally changed in their direction just from seeing a kabuki performance. And that's a powerful statement. So I think just seeing an art form that can transform people like that is worth it anytime.
Thank you for enlightening us, at least tickling our imaginations. The play opens, the two plays, I should say, two for the price of one, opens on Friday night, February 26th. So if you happen to be in the Madison vicinity, you just would be well advised to attend. And you can find out more information about that if you go to our website, which is WPR.org. Go to the University of the Year page for today, February 21st, and find out more.
And the link to the website has great information about the history of kabuki and, a lot of resources on your website.
Our guests have been David Furumoto and Bethany Wood and Gertrude Tsutsumi and Howard Asau. A pleasure.
Thank you very much for having us.
I'm Norman Gilliland with Emily Auerbach. I hope you can join us for the next hour of University of the Air. Join us next Sunday afternoon at 4 for University of the Air as we take to the forests of South America to study a couple of breeds of monkeys that tell us a lot about human behavior, especially in the family. That's next Sunday afternoon at 4 right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.